Hi everybody, thanks for joining me again. It's Mark Jones here with the Ice Cream for the Soul Blog Talk Radio Show. And I'm happy this week to be finally talking to Dave Kibbe. We tried this a couple of weeks ago, but we had all sorts. I'm renowned and famous for my technical issues on Ice Cream for the Soul, and the technical issues were really flowing when I last tried speaking to Dave, so we abandoned it, and here we are again. So let's keep our fingers crossed. So I'll just briefly read you Dave's bio before I bring him onto the air. Dave Kibbe had a 10-year career in teaching, followed by 10 years in business. The last six as a CEO of a £9 million importing company. I imagine that's £9 million per year. But something wasn't right. A restlessness or stirring that drew him to explore human potential, something he had been fascinated with for as long as he can remember. Fast forward to 2015, and Dave works as an independent consultant to businesses, education, and private clients, who are looking to find solutions to stubborn problems. So, hello Dave, welcome.
Hello Mark, how are you mate?
Let's keep our fingers crossed that we stay connected. On the thin internet. Someone said that the internet is very thin in Spain. I don't know what that means.
I'm quietly confident this evening.
I think I'm quite confident.
I think we've got the internet to ourselves, actually. That's my view.
Yeah, Friday. Well, we're recording this on a Friday evening. Everybody's thinking about after work beer and stuff. So they're trying to leave the computers alone. That's my theory, anyway.
Yeah, well, they're all out doing something. You're stuck talking to me. Got to tell you something about the world.
No, we'll be exploring deep meaningful stuff, I'm sure.
Oh, fantastic. I look forward to that.
Either that or be just total nonsense.
Yeah, that sounds like it.
Right. Well, Dave, we've met a couple of times briefly. We've never really had a chance to talk in depth. I know you've spoke to Sheila, my partner, a few times. So, and you're also going to be a guest speaker up at the, well, we'll talk about more about this toward the end of the conversation, but at the upcoming Viva event in Spain in November. So, well, one of the reasons I wanted to speak to you is I'm interested in your the business aspect of things and the education aspect of things. So would you just tell us a little about that, what you've been doing in recently with the consultancy work and what have you?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'll just touch briefly on how I got into any of this.
As I said that, I thought it'd be good to give a little background. People get a sense of who you are. I always like to do that as well.
No, that's cool. I'm the make it up as you go along guy.
I'm great. That's what I've been doing.
Some people, I got friends and whatever who've got such amazingly brilliant and deliberate career paths, and at least that's kind of how it, you know, that's kind of how it looks and the model that we were sold and all that.
Yeah.
And I never really had that. I was going to say flashes of passion. That probably sounds a bit dodgy, really. I don't know if I should say that or not, but I think I just said it. So I literally, it's like, and I've had this always that I can remember, like a glimpse of something that I really want to do, and then I just sort of set about doing it.
Right.
And I never really know if I'm going to get there or anything like that. That I've never really bothered about that very much. It really becomes... Oh, okay, I'm going to do that then, and off I plod, and you know, some of it's more elegant than others, and mostly it isn't. So, the first sort of career thing with that was teaching, and I never really wanted to teach. In fact, I really didn't want to teach, but I found myself in the end doing it, but I wasn't qualified to do it, so I needed to sort that out. And I've always kind of found that things have a habit of sorting themselves out, particularly if you don't bother about it too much. Now, 20 odd years ago or whatever, I wouldn't have bothered about it because I'd never have thought about anything in a sense that we're probably going to talk about, you know, during this conversation. I was just busy, I think like most people, blundering through life. Doing stuff, making decisions, cocking things up. I got very good at recovering from cock-ups because I made so many of them.
expert cocker-upper, so.
I became an expert apologizer, I think, as much as anything. And then I twigged that preemptive apology was usually quite a good thing, so I incorporated that into my skill set. And I love to. I really love teaching. I taught music. I was a fanatical trumpet player. I'm now just a fanatical fan of the trumpet, and I sing and I conduct, and I loved it, and I was really lucky. I taught at an incredible school just outside of Watford for quite a few years, and had some superb mentors, line managers, just had a brilliant time, did loads of cool stuff. Had a really amazing big band, cut a CD, went on tours, you know, all at an ordinary state school. It was just brilliant.
I didn't know any of this, so this is all interesting.
Yeah. This is the unrevealed side. Lapsed into my Mike O'Neill impersonation. It must be the radio, you know, I can hear his voice in my head. Anyway, so I did that and I loved it. But I got really fascinated by... my dad was in business, and so I'd always been around business, and I'd had holiday jobs since I was about 14 or 15 working with my dad because my parents didn't really have any money. What they did was just to kind of keep us ticking along. So it was a sort of, learn to stand on your own two feet. They were massively supportive, but that was the kind of, the sort of money ethic or the work ethic in our family was what I call the struggle model. You know, making money is hard, it's difficult, you have to work long, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I can relate to that. It was kind of how I was brought up, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's, it's the polar opposite of what I think is really wired into the system. And I was going to say because I'm a bit full of myself, but that's an underestimation, I think, because I'm quite a lot full of myself. I don't think I ever tried to hide that I thought fundamentally there was probably an easier way, or that they were just missing seeing something. Because it never really struck me that it was about experience or how clever you were or anything like that. I could see too many exceptions to the rules that I was presented. So I never took much notice of those kind of rules, social rules, if you like. I'm not going to have those apply to me. That doesn't look like it's going to be helpful. So I had this kind of fascination for business, but I was teaching. And this is what happened. The school had an amazing new sports center built. And they've been trying to run like school holiday courses for kids to generate more revenue for the sports center. And they couldn't run them for love nor money. It was an oversubscribed school, very, very popular in the area, massively supportive parents, great governing body, all that kind of stuff. And they couldn't get these courses to run. So me and my mate, who was head of PE, Dave, he's another Dave. I sat with him one day and we were just chewing. I said, I bet we could make a course work. And he was like, yeah, of course we could, you know. And so it was like, well, do you want to do it then? And he was like, yeah, let's do it. So we dreamt up a name for this course, which was Meltdown. That was the name. Project Meltdown. and we sort of, I don't know, it became into a fun project. And we took it to the center manager and, you know, not in a particularly sensitive way, said, look, you screwed it up and don't seem to be able to make it work, but we think we can.
Get to the double D's.
Would you like to let us? And it was a bit reluctant, but I think part of it was, well, let's watch these amateurs fall on their face, you know. And neither of us had any business training, you know, the kind of stuff you hear people talk about or anything. We did what occurred to us and what seemed to make sense. And I was quite good at writing stuff down and sort of dealing with people and whatever. And Dave was really, really good at talking to kids and whatever and getting them enthusiastic about exercise and sport and all that. So he went and did half a dozen assemblies at local kind of primary schools or whatever, and said, look, we're running this course, and we leafleted whatever, and we sold it out in about 3 days.
Wow.
About 40 places, and bam, it was, you know, it was, so all of a sudden it became, oh, crikey, we're going to have to actually do it. Because I think often when you set out to do stuff, do you know what I mean? You're almost playing it like you might not have to do it because it might not work.
Yeah, I can relate to that, yeah.
So it was like, the universe had called our bluff, and it was like,
yeah, it's like, oh, shit, we've got to do it now.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. So we got some of the A-level PE crew to kind of help out, and we hired them and paid them and did this thing, and it was really cool. And then one day the weather was terrible. It was a fantastic sports center, so it was great. We had big indoor facilities, it was no problem. But on the pitches, the football pitches that were next to the sports center, I think it was Chelsea were doing youth training and trials and stuff. So there was loads of like, you know, really keen parents and their kids and everything. And the weather was foul. I think it was an Easter holiday, so it was cold as well. And these parents were, and they would come into the reception of the sports center, and they'd be looking around, you know, or they'd use the facilities or whatever. And then one of them said to me, you know, is there anywhere to get a coffee? And I said, no, I'm really sorry. There's no sort of coffee here. And they were like, oh, that's a bit rubbish. And I said, yeah, it is, isn't it? Can you come back in half an hour? And then the guy kind of looked at me and went, well, I suppose so. Why? And so I ran up the stairs to Dave and I said, I'm going out. And he was like, what? Where are you going? I said, I'm just going to the supermarket. He said, why? I said, we're going to sell coffee. You know, none of this, let's be kind and serve and all that, like, you know, that kind of stuff. No, it's like
somewhere to make a quick buck.
Yeah. And so I went off and, you know, I grabbed one of the sick formers, chucked him in the car, went out, bought big thing of coffee, big thing of tea bags, bag of sugar, ton of milk, put all the kettles on we could find, and we started and made up a price and started selling tea and coffee. And we made more profit in that sort of, you know, like period of time selling tea and coffee than we did with the rest of the course. and there was some major, you know, like business learning there.
Yeah.
Of
yeah.
basic fundamentals of how you make money. And it was like, oh. So we were really pleased we made the course one and whatever, you know, made it run and it was profitable. But then suddenly we'd started to see that if you really understood that what people wanted, and if you really did your costings properly, and if there was limited supply or scarcity, as people say, and there's people who want it, you can sell it. And within reason, you can sell it at a pretty good price, which means you can make really, really good profit.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I like this. You know, the demon in me like lit up.
Yes.
Like,
oh, the dollar signs or the pound.
Yeah, this is interesting. And to be honest, it wasn't so much the money, it was the freedom that you could do what you wanted. It's like there's a lot of rules in education in schools.
Yeah, I've got friends who are teachers, so I know that.
Yeah, and it was like, oh, hang on, this would be an interesting game to play. And I think something stirred at that point, and I started to get more and more involved in the business side of the school, on governing bodies that were to do with income and generation, all that kind of stuff. And I started buying books and doing a bit of reading and whatever. And then I remember one day, a fateful day in the staff room, and I'm sitting there one lunchtime. It was actually a lunchtime when I didn't have a rehearsal, so I was actually having a lunch break, you know. And I looked around, and most of the guys who were in there were at least 10 years older than me. And this sounds really bad, right? But I looked around and I went, which one will I become? And it frightened the shit out of me. It was like, oh, no, I can't do this. And I panicked. I really did. You know, I was properly feeling that thought of, oh my goodness, what's going to happen? This isn't where I want to go, whatever. And then I had this ridiculous idea of, well, I'll go into business then. And anyway, cut a long story short, I managed to blag my way onto a placement with Cadbury Schweppes for a couple of weeks, and went and did some work with their HR team on turning vision into practical day-to-day activity. Because that's where I see loads of people and organizations struggle like buggery. They've got a great idea, they've got talent, but they don't know how to take one step after the next. And I just got really fascinated by companies who were great at that and sharing culture and all this kind of stuff, and companies who were just crap. It didn't matter what they did, it would just never work. So they offered me a job, which was really, really cool, but I didn't want to work for a company that was that big. I just saw no appeal in that. I'm a big fish, small pond kind of creature, or I was whenever that was, 1998, 1999, something like that. And so I thought, right, I want to get into business. What do I do? And it just dawned on me to start asking people I know whether they give me a job.
Right.
And that's what I did.
Right.
I just started asking people who I knew had businesses whether they needed somebody. And mostly it was like, when you're a music teacher, Blinky Chalk, would you know about it? But I managed to persuade somebody who I had a bit of leverage on to let me go and do some work there during a holiday for a week. And the deal was that...
So you blackmailed your way in, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think so. I like to think of it like that. Yeah. So I gave a week of my holiday and went and did a little project for them. And the deal was that if they liked it, maybe they'd think about giving me a job. And if they didn't, then all I'd lost was a week of my holiday. But I'm pretty persistent when I want something. So I didn't really relent. And I was supposed to be there a week, but after 3 days, I think basically I'd worn them all out.
Right.
So they let me go. I wrote my report and they offered me a job. And I started in August 1999. So I came out of teaching. Everybody said I'd fail, it was stupid, yada, 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 yada. I started it, I hated it, like with an abiding, I was just so, like, fish out of water culturally.
Yeah.
I was so naive and I think quite disrespectful of what people wanted and whatever. And in my thinking, I just knew everything. I knew all the answers. It was an innocent but a fairly full on kind of time, and so I learned pretty quickly that wasn't going to get me far, but I hated it more than I can explain. And then I had one thought, and that thought was, it would be better if you ran it then, because then at least it would be in the way that you could cope with, which is so ridiculous. But literally that became the new vision, the new thing to walk towards, if you like, the new destination. And I took over running it 4 years later.
Right. So was that just working your way up, or did you have to kill a few people? Or?
I killed a lot of people. I did, en route. And bizarrely enough, it's one of the things that I don't look back at that and think, oh, that was an error. There are things that I did where I look back and hang my head and shake my head and think, crikey, I can write it off as innocence, but I really was a knobhead, to be truthful. But the moving people on, no, that was always done, I think, for their benefit as much as the benefit of the company. There was a lot of people who just got stale and weren't very respectful towards themselves and the organization. And part of the fun of business is being in something that's bigger than you are.
You just struck with that, because I think that's what a big problem with a lot of businesses, especially when people just have been there so many years and it just becomes a... they're on a treadmill many ways, so they perhaps lose enthusiasm. And that's got to affect the business on some level, hasn't it?
Yeah, massively so.
Even if they're doing the jobs, if the enthusiasm's not there, it's...
Well, if you look at it from a sort of, like a principal's perspective, then you're stuck in the same thought. And thoughts like playing the same CD track over and over and over again, isn't it? You know, when you hear a really cool CD track, and you think, oh, I love that. And I don't know whether you do this, but I'll play it again and then again and again. And my kids are like it with DVDs. They'll buy a DVD and they'll watch it and they'll go, can we watch it again?
Yeah.
And I'll watch it again. But by the by the fifth, sixth, seventh time or whatever, it's stale.
Yeah.
And it's the same with thought, isn't it? It's the same with what goes through our heads and we buy into and believe to be true. That to start with, you get this new idea and it's like, oh, great. But then if you kind of hang around in it for too long, there's something gets a bit yucky about it. And I think that's what happens to people, is that they're stuck in that thought rut of oh, well, you know, I need to do this, or, you know, I can't do any more or whatever. And that natural flow of fresh inspiration or power that goes through all of us is stifled. Because that's one of the weird quirks of being human, isn't it? Is that you've got this incredible capacity to do stuff, and energy and source and mind, or however you want to describe it, you know, God within you. But then you've got this entire sophisticated neurological system that allows you to replicate what's already there. Yeah, so you can create this entire representation that's mimicking the primary function because it thinks it needs to. And I think that's sort of where we get stuck. We start buying into the story of ourselves, or the identity, or the character, or the ego, and we start fueling that. And I just had this weird vision as we're chatting of like the, you know, it's almost like in computing terms, like this cloud-based server. Think of mind as that, or God as that, the cloud-based server. And we're busy pissing around with our sort of, you know, 32 meg of RAM, trying to cram more and more data into it and stuff, going, oh yeah, if I could just do a bit more and go on, and like the cloud sitting there looking down at this pitiful amount of data retention, going, look, I'm just sitting here waiting to be used. Why are you bogging around with local storage when you've got the entire capacity at your fingertips? And that's where the innocence comes in. But I think you're right, the net product from a business point of view is that people's thinking gets stale, so they, you know, their consciousness falls or whatever, so they get caught in their own thought world. And that natural sort of fresh air or inspiration or entrepreneurial spirit, if we're talking business, gets stifled. It's playing in the background, but no bugger's listening to it because they're too busy sitting in their car listening to the CD that they listened to yesterday.
They're too scared to try a new CD.
Yeah. Or they don't even know it's a CD, and they don't even know that there's a, you know, there's sort of Spotify one click away. And that's where like getting a tiniest understanding of the principles and working in business has just so transformed what I do and how I do it.
Yeah.
The technical knowledge is quite useful to a degree, but to be honest, we started to make loads more money and stuff way before I had any of this like know-how, because we just followed what looked like it would make sense.
Right.
And I made sure there was enough sort of people around who would say, no, that sounds like bollocks. That's the worst idea ever.
Yeah.
And weren't bothered about job titles and stuff like that, so that you couldn't easily start believing yourself.
Yeah, you kept people kept around, just keep you grounded and stuff.
Yeah, which is kind of like what people might use, you know, those of us who are coaching or whatever for. It's like you don't want to get caught too much in your own, you know, thought model of the world when there's something far more infinitesimal and powerful and beautiful and loving and joyous and rich in every sense of the word, and that's just like one fresh thought away.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of how it starts to tie together from my perspective.
Just staying in the unknown is what I'm hearing a lot when you speak. Use those words, but staying open-minded.
Yeah, I guess that's what it looks like when you're looking from the outside in.
Yeah.
From the inside, I'm not sure that ever dawned on me or ever does particularly. I suppose anecdotally, I describe it as blundering on. You just sort of head forwards, really.
I really love walking. I know you love walking and the treks and stuff you do out there. And
yeah.
It reminds me of like the first time you walk up a path or a ridge that you don't know, and you know you're going to the top, and you can see the landscape around you, and you've got a sense of which direction might be good to go in. But you really don't want to be too preoccupied with what's likely to be around the corner, because it'll take you away from the next really important footstep, and it only takes one footstep, so you fall flat on your ass.
Yep.
So, but then somebody would look at that and go, oh, okay, so that's about being in the now. Well, I guess it is, but to me, it's more about looking about how the system's designed than trying to describe what you think the system's doing, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So more physics than engineering.
So when you say the systems, you're talking about the system of your own mind, or the system, the business systems, or?
Well, I think it can be either. I like that analogy, actually. I mean, yeah, the system of the mind, or the way we interpret the world, the way we see the world through our own sort of perception, or our own representation of what's going on, and so we're acting continually according with what we think is true. So I'm going to be describing the world right now and my understanding and everything with according to what I think is true right in this moment. And then, you know, had the internet not beaten us back 2 weeks ago, it could have sounded really, really different. That's just the nature of the game. That's the changeable part, if you like. But beneath that is this thing that doesn't seem to change. You know, that some will call mind, other spiritual spheres will call consciousness or super consciousness, supreme, that was the word I was looking for, supreme consciousness. But it's that kind of awareness that brings a wry smile to your face, that as you're kind of watching yourself go through all these things, you're aware of something that changes, which means that you know you were the thing that's changing, but if you're aware of all the changes as well, then there's got to be something else going on. And then what I started to find this year is that there's something behind that I really have no clue about at all, but it makes me grin thinking about it, that sees the observance of the changing as well. So there's what's changing, what's noticing the change, and then there's an awareness of something that notices change. And somewhere in that threeness, that trinity, is the mystery of this game of life. You know, and this might be the most ridiculous thing, but it just came into my head that business is not dissimilar, because you've got, you know, what you sell or what service you offer, and that provides revenue. You've got the cost of delivering that or making it or whatever, and that's your cost. And then what remains is your profit. So there's your trinity of business. And in the same, from a fixed asset point of view, you've got what assets you have, your liability, in other words, what you owe to the world, what you're in credit to your suppliers or people for, and then you've got what remains, which to sustain a business needs to be net asset. So you need to have greater assets than liabilities. And there's something magical about this threeness, this trinity, in all sorts of walks, isn't it? You know, mind, consciousness, thought, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, profit, cost, sales. I mean, the obvious analogy to make, but there's something about this appreciation of the fact that we seem to land between those things in varying degrees at varying points. And some days you can be really caught up in the, oh, I'm the thing that's changing. You know, that's who I am. That's the identity, if you like. And other days you've got this more sort of playful, settled feel, but you're seeing that change and whatever. And then there's just glimpses every now and again, which for me is this this beautiful spiritual kind of place that people refer to, where you're seeing all of it, and there's an enormous stillness in that place.
So when you're talking to your clients, then, Dave, because I know sometimes you can't necessarily dive straight in with people and start talking about all the trinities and mind and consciousness. And I'm just curious, how do you? And I know it's probably not an out. There isn't probably a one particular way you do it, but I'm going to ask a question anyway. How do you start off when you're meeting clients?
It's a good question, and I think one of the things I've noticed is that I've heard myself say, and I hear lots of people say, "Oh, you know, you can't talk about that or this or whatever really, really quickly," and I'm becoming less and less convinced that that's true, and more and more certain that that's just because it's not that familiar, that conversation.
Yeah.
And if you look at perhaps what I would call my pure corporate clients, then no, in a sense, I'm not hired to talk to them about God or mind or, yeah. or you know, then no. But what they are after is solutions or improved results, and usually one leading to the other. But what they do recognize is things like inspiration, realization, insights, fresh thinking. And so you're never very few words away from pointing in the same direction. And that's not really looking to try and describe, it'd be like trying to describe the sea to somebody so that they could get a feeling of what it's like on a warm evening to sit and listen to the waves. You know, it just doesn't work that well. You know, well, it's pretty big and sort of floppy and watery, and it, you know, two-dimensional language doesn't serve that very well. But if somebody can get a feel for what it's like to sit by the waves, so if a corporate team can get a feel for what it's like to understand just a little bit more about inspiration, and at the same time get insights on perhaps the things that they thought were screwing them over aren't necessarily what was screwing them over, that there was something else at play that they hadn't considered at that time, i.e. state of mind or thought, if you like. If they can get that, I never cease to be amazed at how quickly the conversation can move in, you know, what might be termed in inverted commas a more spiritual direction. I'll give you a really tangible example from this week, actually. Tuesday, okay. I was out in doing a training for some business insight software over in Maidenhead, and the guy who'd hired me, that the board sponsor, had gone on there earlier and to kind of check all the, so you'll appreciate that, to check all the technical stuff was working and whatever. And when I got there, I'd got there really early so I could get around the M25 and everything. And then I'd found the place, and then I'd gone off and got some breakfast. So I got there probably 45 minutes before we were due to kick off. And he was in a real flap. You know, there was settings problems with the Wi-Fi. The room wasn't really big enough. There was no projector for the presentation I was supposed to deliver or any of that.
Right.
And he was full of apologies, but at the same time, trying to get things sorted. You know, you could see he was in fixing mode. And I just sort of reassured him and said, you know, it's fine. And just started chatting to the guys who were there and getting to know them a little bit. And, you know, he was diving around, you know, can I borrow your phone? Can you try tethering onto this laptop? Can we use your iPhone? Can we use the Wi-Fi? And he really got himself in a total spin, but
yeah.
But I knew there wasn't anything to do about that. So there was stuff to do about the technology, but I also knew that in the state he was in, he was unlikely to find elegant solutions easily. But also he's the boss man, and he wanted it to be right. You know, there was real integrity and stuff. So there's a mixture of what's going on, and it just occurred to me to let him do stuff, and then quietly get on in the background and see if I could find an answer.
Right.
Which I did, and then I could sort of gently go, oh look, I've managed to get on. Oh, how cool is that? You know. And he was like, really, really? And then another guy went, actually, I've managed to get on too. And by this point, he was, you know, he was a mixture of relieved and sort of furious all in one go. So it's like, you know, why can you and I can't? And all, you know, and all that innocent kind of stuff. And then I said to him, do you want a coffee? And, you know, and he went, actually, yeah, no, I'm thirsty. I said, oh, cool. I think... You know, I think Carl's on it now. He'll network all of those. We'll check them in a second. And actually, I could do with asking you a couple of questions. And so we went off and you know.
So he was subtly diffusing his frustrations.
Yeah, absolutely. But you could spend £800 going on a course called Subtly Diffuse Colleagues' Frustrations.
And I think that might be a viable project, Dave.
Yeah, I'm liking it. Yeah, but the price goes up at midnight, and but you do get free tea and coffee, so that's good. You have to bring your own cup. But the point was that you know, first of all, I've never been on that course, and secondly, it's already there. It's all built into the system for you.
Hmm.
There's really nothing you have to do to command any of that, or to bring any of that, or whatever. Do you know what I mean? There's no sort of effort to expend in that. Once you've got just this slight inkling of what we're all up against, and is going for us, because it's not a battle. But do you know what I mean? It's like what we're involved in, all of us, moment to moment. All of the time. So you and I are dealing with it right now. He was dealing with it then. Anyone who listens to this is listening, is dealing with it in exactly the same way. And I love that. I love the simplicity of the fact that we're all in the same boat all of the time. There's something incredibly leveling about that. And watching... You know, watching him get in a lather about that, and knowing full well that it could have been me, or it could be me driving home, or whatever, or whatever, or whatever. So that it takes the heat out of it. It's like I don't need to fix it. I don't need to feel badly for him. Nothing. You know, leaves you really psychologically free to go with what occurs to you to be a good idea, which in this case, as you rightly said, was the icebreaker and the coffee and a bit of a chat. And we had a bit of a chat. He settled down a little bit, but what was really interesting was when the guys kind of turned up for the training, was that they gravitated towards those of us who'd settled, and he was kind of left, you know, like twerking away in the corner on his own, you know, and he just couldn't quite snap out of it, and you know, so that's interesting to watch. So. You know, even in, because business environments, they don't, I mean, although the business environment exists, businesses don't really exist. I mean, they're contractual arrangements, aren't they, that live on pieces of paper. So businesses are just people. And as a person, we're all in the same boat, as far as I can see, all of the time. And that, you know, we're not the titles that we give ourselves or whatever. I love it when people read bios, and every time I hear my bio, I just think it just makes me laugh a lot, because it's like it's funny what's included or what not's included, or you know, what's important, and you know, we adjust it because of our audience, because you know, we want to look good for the audience and all that stuff, and you know, over time, more and more of that loses all of its appeal, and I find the more raw you are, the more honest you are, even in environments where they're used to very, very stiff corporate training or whatever. When you just turn up and it's quite clear that you know you've brought all of you including bits of your laundry, if you like. There's something that settles in people that they can put down that bloody mask of, here's who I'm trying to be today.
And connect with
themselves, and therefore connect with the tasks and the business. And it's cool.
That really struck me there, what you said, and I think that's what I'm noticing more and more about this understanding. Where one of the reasons why it can be helpful, it doesn't really matter if it's in business or relationships, or you and I both know it across the board in life, it's helpful. Because, and I think you hit the nail on the head there. It's like people turning up as themselves, not with their mask on of like, I'm the CEO or I'm the trainer, or, and you know you've got that, you know that's maybe your role in what you've got to do, but you don't have to constantly be projecting yourself through that filter of that role. And I think people, it's refreshing to people to have that humanness come through, and that vulnerability or just honesty. And I was only struck, just don't mind me jumping in here, Dave, but I was invited to my old school. There was a Facebook group started from my old high school, which is, it was over 20 odd years ago now since I was there. And I was struck, somebody posted on there and they said, who was your favourite teacher? And I knew immediately who my favourite teacher was, a guy called Mr. Johnson. And I was amazed at how many people came up with the same. This high school thing, it's turned into more of a Mr. Johnson fan club. And I was reflecting on it afterwards, and I thought, it reminded me then of just what you were speaking with, because he was a very good teacher. He was quite strict. You know, in those days, you could give you a thick ear if you'd messed about and whatever. I had more than one thick ear off him. But he spoke to you with person to person when he was out of them certain roles, you know. And I think that's probably why there were so many other ex-students came up with that, what a great teacher he was, because he was a very authentic guy. And I think there's no reason why you can't be that in whatever you're doing, if you're in a training program or a business leader, whatever. Is there?
Yeah, I think that's so spot on. And something that occurred to me when you were talking, you know, that, I mean, you're right. When my section of the training started, I was the trainer. So if you like, I adopted probably some trainer mannerisms that I've got and all sorts of stuff. But it's, to me, it's kind of like, once you know you're an actor, if you like, you can go and act any role you want. And if you watch all the really amazing actors, you'll see that fundamentally they play themselves in different movies. But it's still incredibly... Tom Hanks springs to mind, actually. He's one of my favourite actors ever. But it's kind of like he's just going and hanging out on set and being Tom Hanks. But he's entirely believable, whether he's playing somebody in the military or somebody with autism or what. Do you know, somebody in... The Apollo 13 or any of his sort of great movies, he's entirely credible and believable. But and he's got all the mannerisms of those persons and whatever, the sort of characters, that's the word I was looking for. So he does all of that, but you always know it's him. And that's the thing to me, is you kids are good at this. You know, kids are just brilliant at spotting when we're in fraud mode. You know, my kids are fantastic at it. They'll look at me and go, you're not yourself. I'm like, well, who do you think I am? there's only me in here, you know. I think there's a voice in my head, but it's my voice, you know. But anyway, but they're like, no, you're not right. You can feel it. And that's the thing. We've got this connection, this sixth sense, if you like, this something bigger than who we think we are going on. And we all know it, you know, as much as we might not want to know it at times, or or people go, no, it's rubbish, spiritual bollocks, it's just all what it is. And it's like, well, yeah, actually, if you listen to the spiritual guys, that's what they're telling you. It is what it is. It's the isness of all things. So you know, and so we've all got that at some level. And then I think, you know, for some of us, that becomes a real curiosity because we've got tired of the kind of odor of chasing our own persona, if you like.
Mm.
It's like not showering and just perpetually putting on different brands of aftershave.
Mm.
And it's like, well, really, to be honest, you want to go and take a shower. That would help the smell an awful lot. And that was kind of what I think what happened for me a few years ago. It was like, yeah, you know, I'm just putting different brands of aftershave on, but I'm not really getting any cleaner. I'm not getting any better understanding of what's going on here.
Hmm.
I'm falling down the same holes over and over and over again. And you know, it is like that thing, isn't it? That if you don't solve something or learn from it, it is rather like it's sent to you in different guises repeatedly.
Oh yes, I can see
it. Smack it up before it and go, oh yeah, okay. Yeah, fair cop. There's something for me to get here, and I just think that's the thing, particularly in business, where I was doing a training at the Chartered Institute of Management Accountants up in town, and I was sitting there one day waiting for, I don't know, to see somebody from HR or whatever, and I was watching these two people, and it was obviously some kind of appraisal review. And these two people had coffee together, and they were chatting, and it was really friendly and all that kind of stuff. And then it came for the time for the review to occur. So the one person opened their book and got their pen, and then started adopting this weird mannerisms and sort of very deliberate way of sitting, and sort of looked at the other person with their, I'm doing it, which is bizarre because this is like a radio interview, so you can't see me, but I'm doing it. I'm tipping my head to one side, and she looked across the table, and she said, so, Susan, how do you think things are going for you? And it's like, sorry? Could somebody stop? Why have you just suddenly started talking like that?
Yeah.
You obviously know this person, and you've got a great dialogue, but we've got this weird notion that there's a way we should be, and that being the way we naturally are, and sometimes we will, you know, do these kind of things. It's all cool, but it's that we think we should. Because of insert XYZ reason, you know, whatever the logic of today is, because that's how we do it, or this is the corporate culture, or whatever other flavor of bullshit you would particularly like today. It's comical and sort of innocent and yet sort of sad all in one go, watching people who are connecting really, really genuinely and then suddenly play a game. But they weren't playing a game. You know, you watch children play those games, and they act out the game, but as themselves. And when they're play acting, they know that they're not the character. Whereas it was like these people thought they needed to stop being themselves and really become the character.
Yeah, as if themselves aren't enough in some ways.
Yeah, and something seems to be lost in that.
Hmm.
You know, it's back to that there's nothing wrong with having a sort of 32 meg pen drive or whatever, but it's kind of useful to know that the cloud's available.
Mm.
There's nothing wrong with getting caught up and taking yourself seriously and whatever, but it's kind of nice to know that that's not really how it is. And it is how it is, but it isn't really how it is. And that's sort of a game. And there's something very settling in knowing that you don't need to bother too much about the you that you think you are.
Mm.
Once you start to catch sight of something more long lasting than that, you know, there's a sort of freedom in that, I think.
Mm. When you say there's something more long lasting, I know what you mean, but. And you've spoke about this a little in the conversation. What do you mean by that? Could you put some more words on that?
I think the challenge with this is to avoid putting the words of somebody else who you admire or respect in the way they would describe it. Not necessarily there's anything wrong with that, but it's kind of fun to go and find it.
Yeah, you know? Find your own way of seeing
it. And experience it rather than experience the thought of it, if you like. So, but I'll give you an example. I was listening to something when I was driving the other day, and so I had the experience of I was driving along the M25, and I was aware that I was seeing things in front of me and around me, which, given I was driving on the M25, was quite useful, really. Quite a good thing to have that experience. So I'm aware of that. Yeah. But then I was aware.
Can I just interrupt you, though? Isn't the M25 also known as the Road to Hell? Was it the Chris Rea who labelled it that in his song?
Yeah. It's my favourite road ever. I love it. I won't have a bad karma said about the M25.
Okay, then. All right. I'm sorry to interrupt you then.
Go on. No, it's all right. It's always kind to me. So, like a road could be kind. Anyway. So I'm driving along and I'm looking at stuff and whatever, and then suddenly I notice I'm aware that I'm looking. So who is it that's aware of looking? So I can see what I can see, but I'm aware that there's something that can see.
Mm.
And then like in a flash, you have some kind of inkling that something's aware in an instant, that you're aware that something's seen.
Hmm.
So it's like now sitting at home on this recording, I can see everything in our room, you know, in front of me. But I've kind of, I know that it's I'm that looking. But there's something that knows that I'm able to observe looking. And so that to me at a felt level points to something beyond the surface flux of the day to day, changeable. Yeah. I can remember when I was frustrated and why I left business and whatever, but then I can remember feeling different. So who's the I that remembers?
Yes. I think this is very, there may be some people listening to this and thinking, what are they talking about? And when I first heard this kind of stuff being talked about, I was a bit like that. But then there suddenly comes a point, or there doesn't come a point, it depends where people are, where they recognize what's being, or they see, or they realize what you're talking about. And I heard somebody saying it, and it, before I'd been impacted by the kind of things you're talking about, I think it might have been Muji, the teacher. I think you're quite familiar with Muji, aren't you?
Yeah.
And somebody was talking to him about, and he was talking very much in the way that you are about the mind. And I think somebody said to him, "Oh, I'm confused now." And he said, "Yeah, but isn't there something that sees the confusion within you that's not confused? It knows you're confused, but that's not confused. It totally knows that you're confused."
Yeah,
watching exactly. The confusion. And I think it's that, just it's watching things as they occur, and you don't, and I heard this very much in what you were saying before. Maybe it wasn't necessarily the main thing you were pointing towards, but I could see how it would help. For example, the guy who was getting a bit stressed with the technical issues before, all that tension and stress that starts to build up, it gets in the way of that clarity that, for example, going back to the confusion statement, where you, there's that space that's just totally at peace with what is it? It sees the confusion, it sees the stress, and that's the place you want to be going back to find whatever you need to find. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, completely. And I am really wary of kind of, you know, of adopting like Muji's rhetoric or Rupert Spear or anybody, you know, who people may have come across and listened to. And it's like, you want to see it from the inside out. You want to get I like how you said a realization, or your own felt experience, and just see what that's like. But But you know, most people, I think, can, when I've talked to clients and people about it, can see that they're describing themselves, if you like. You know, oh yeah, I was really caught up or whatever. So they can do that in the past tense. That's straightforward. Mm. But there's something in the present moment that has you twig, oh, I thought that's how it was. So who is it that's seeing how it was, how it is now, and that the thought has changed?
Mm.
Who's the witness or the observer of that process?
Mm.
And then somewhere beneath that is something that sees the thing that witnesses that change.
Mm.
So like the third level, if you like, because it's easy to get caught in your head about it and start trying to mentally think it through and am I thinking I'm seeing this and whatever, and it's like getting a glimpse of something. You get a glimpse or a sense that you know, for the guy in the meeting room, he was the one who was very, very stressed, and that stress looked and felt real because the Wi-Fi wasn't working and whatever. And he was too locked in that level of awareness, if you like, to see that there was any other awarenesses that were available in that moment.
Yeah.
It's a more expansive awareness of what's going on in the moment. I can see I'm lost. Well, who's the I compared to the I'm lost? You know, what's that? And that's what Muji talks about, isn't it? Who is the I that am?
Hmm.
And I know then other people say, well, you know, there is no I to am, and I think they're referring to the person or to the character or the ego, which is a psychological creation of literally who we think we are, who I think I am, what I think my bio is, which is a hugely edited, usually based around trying to impress or influence or something, isn't it? That's usually
what, whoever you're talking to, you'll...
Yeah, no, that's right. You know, if I say that, then please, they might think I know something. It's all that. God, please, or I'll be so unworthy. It's all that kind of game and nonsense, you know. But the more you see, I don't know. It's the more you kind of know a little bit about what's going on and have some kind of felt reference for it. I just find it endlessly more entertaining. I mean, I find life quite entertaining anyway. I was really curious on Tuesday. I was watching. You know, the conditions for this training were terrible. We had no projector or whatever. I was running demonstrations of software on a screen that was, you know, like 14 inches big or something, with eight people in a room. Not once did anybody grumble.
Right.
But they got it. They completely understood what we were. Had great questions since, because they've gone away and started using it.
Right.
And it's like... That's available beyond any form of conditioning. Now, the other guy just couldn't see anything beyond conditioning.
Hmm.
And that's where suffering comes in for all of us, you know. If you can't see anything beyond your conditioned thought of suffering, you'll suffer. And we've all done it to some or lesser degree.
Hmm.
It's a commonality of human condition, you know. Whether it's what we would consider to be a major life incident or travesty or something, you know, that others, I mean, a lot of that is very, very subjective. But if you can't see beyond that conditioned thought of how the world is and what that means for you, so you think you are that thinking, you know, when, because I do some like therapeutic stuff as well, which I really, really enjoy, having had depression once myself, like years and years ago. So if you really think that you are stressed, you are the stress, and the stress is out there, then you've got no escape from that. And that's really debilitating.
Mm.
You know, and you'll go to all sorts of extremes to try and cope with that, deal with that, handle it, and just be constantly mystified at how it doesn't work. and why you're stuck there and why that's fair or isn't fair or any of those things. And you just cannot possibly entertain the idea when you're so caught in that thought as your reality, that it's your thought and therefore your reality.
Yeah.
You can't see that not only is it your movie, your screen, but you own the cinema and the freehold rights to the land as well. I mean, you can't get anywhere near that when it looks like that's all you are.
Yeah.
But if you can get a chink of light into what we've been talking about, you know, that in any given moment you can have any felt experience of anything, then that's the road home out of suffering and utter turmoil and shit and all the stuff that people get locked in, day out. And
that's what it is in many ways, isn't it? When people don't see how it's working, you use the term, they get locked in. And it's people become prisoners of their own thinking, don't they?
Oh, I can really remember sitting awake night after night, literally, with my head in my hands, wishing I could. It felt like there was something in my head I wanted to pull out. It was like the most inexplicable pressure in my head, and I just wanted to get it out somehow. And sometimes that would end in me shouting. Sometimes it would end in me crying. Sometimes it would end in me, you know, kicking a door or chucking a tantrum or whatever, because that's how that degree of wound up thinking feels. You know, it feels real because in that moment it's completely real.
Yeah.
So you know, so someone saying, "Oh, it's not real" or whatever. Well, I can tell you, when you sit on the edge night after night and you're exhausted, it's real enough. And you know, but even in that really sort of, you know, not nice period of what's been a very pleasurable life, really, there's something almost like the tiniest flame that's there that you're aware of. That can't be extinguished. So it's interesting to look back at it and sort of notice that. And it would have been a lot more bloody helpful at the time, but isn't that how life rolls? That somehow I was aware that I was sitting with my head in my hands, wishing I could pull this imaginary thing out of my head, stop driving myself crazy. So the answer was always there, and that's the thing I see more and more and more. Is that it's already there. It's been put there for you if you can have the space to see it.
It's finding the obvious, isn't it? In some ways.
Yeah, and sometimes you just got to trip over it, and but it can be kind of cool as well. I was chatting to a mate on the phone the other night, and I was having a bit of a rant actually about. Oh, some kind of gushy, coachy nonsense that was just kind of a bandwagon. And it's entirely my thing. I was making it up, and I sort of knew I was. I sort of wasn't. But we were having a giggle and a rant anyway. And then suddenly, from nowhere, it said, "I'll tell you what it is. I'm really wanting a shift of community, a change, a something, whatever." And that very evening, I was, you know, arsing around on Facebook. And suddenly this group appeared, and I knew the person who started the group. I met her a few years ago, and I looked and I went, "Oh, she's lovely. That looks interesting." And then I looked at a few of the posts, and I thought, "Oh, no, is that a bit flaky for me?" You know, even though I'm quite good with my corn flakiness, but it just like whatever. And something, even though by this point, you know, my intellect's on it, so yeah. I haven't got the nicest feeling. But it was like, join the group. So I thought, "Oh, okay." So I sent an invitation request. Can I come in to your door and whatever?
Yeah.
And then the next day it came in, and I went in, and I didn't post for a while because lots of the posts were, you know, I said, "Oh, I'm not sure." But again, this is you know, this is just shitty thinking. So I put the post, and then all these people I hadn't spoken to for ages were like, "Oh, this is great, blah, blah, blah." and started to get involved, lo and behold, there's the community.
And
it's gorgeous. And so you just, you know, and the mistake would be for me to think that the, you know, my feelings were coming from their posts or, you know, whatever and whatever. And it's just a bit of relief. And you get caught in that. I mean, when I was ranting to my friend, I mean, even though I was sort of saying, you know, yeah, there's something for me to learn here, I didn't really believe it. I just thought I was right. Because normally I think I'm right, you know. That's how it rolls. Until I prove that, oh dear, never mind. Just, you know. it's really lovely and actually it allowed me to express something about what I wanted to do that I haven't shared with anybody, and I just suddenly found myself chucking it into this group of total strangers, and it's just, you know, that thing people call wisdom or intuition or gut or whatever, just knowing that that's always playing out, all there, all the time. You know, but we've been conditioned out of ever looking for it, heaven forbid relying on it. I mean, you know, imagine going into a board meeting and telling everybody, you know, this quarter's plan is to rely on intuition.
Oh my God.
But of course, the irony being, everybody knows that's the only thing you can really bank on, because your intellect's as shaky as hell, you know. There's the irony.
Well, Dave, I've just looked at the time. We've gone well over the hour. I think we're up into.
Oh crikey! Yeah, you're right.
it's been absolutely lovely talking to you. Yeah. And I'm looking forward. Well, I did mention it briefly at the beginning of the conversation. You're going to be coming over, being part of the Viva event. So yeah, I'm sure if people want to connect with you here, up there, they can do it. But if people wanted to get in touch with you, perhaps work with you, or are you willing to give your email address out?
Yeah. You can find me at davekibbe@ymail.com. That's just the letter ymail.com. So like Gmail, but ymail. Or connect with me on Facebook, Dave Kibbe. That's one of my other favourite social places to hang out.
I spend probably a bit too much time on the film face, but there's like you say, you mentioned that group. Then if you get into certain groups, there's a lot of interesting stuff out there these days that people are up to and talking about, and I find it very educational as well.
It is my favourite place of all the social platforms for kind of community and getting to know people and stuff. So love it.
Well, Dave, thanks again, and I'll let you get off now so you can enjoy the rest of the evening, what's left of it. So
thank you very much indeed.
I look forward to seeing you here in Spain. And if people want more information about that, just give there's the website of the Aviva event is www.avivaevent.com. And if anybody wants to contact me, they can contact me at icecreamforthesoul@hotmail.com. And also, I've got people may know that I've got the regular trekking events going on. I've got one in September with Paul Morgan Summers. So if trekking's your thing, Dave mentioned he likes walking. But if that's your thing as well, just give me a shout and I can send you more information. So just down the line, Dave, after I've stopped the recording, I always forget to bloody tell people that. So thanks again, everybody. And I'm not sure my guest will be next week, but as always, I'm sure it'll be somebody interesting. Bye, Dave. Bye, everybody.